31. "A gold coin for your thoughts," Kanawha said, spying Raleigh pacing back and forth near her wagon. Blue smoke hung thick around her as she puffed rapidly on a large cigar. Every few steps she would stop, take the cigar out of her mouth, then look to the sky, visible now that the sun was up and had burned away the mist. It appeared that she was speaking to someone Kanawha couldn't see.
"I can't see him either," Raleigh said, sending a cool trickle of unease up his spine as she answered his unspoken thought.
"Martimus, was it?" he asked. He looked to the sky, but beyond a new batch of rain-laden clouds on the horizon there was no sign of the Shrieks, or any other flying creature for that matter.
"Oh, I hope it still is," she said, clamping down on the cigar and walking back to her wagon.
She motioned for him to follow. Kanawha obliged, and was surprised to see Jeer curled up underneath her wagon, his muzzle resting on his paws and his ears twitching in dream. Raleigh bent and gave the Bengar a scratch behind the ears, and his whiskers fluttered and his hind legs stretched out to the fullest. He never opened his eyes. She stood up, jumped onto the running board along the side of the wagon, and leaned her head back against the wooden cages. The Shrieks inside purred in response. Kanawha remained standing a few feet away.
"Martimus looked like he could take care of himself?"
"Normally, yes. But things are no longer normal," she said, pulling out her cigar and waving it around her.
The smoke left a fat trail in the air like a snake through mud.
"Will you send another?"
Raleigh sighed and looked at the caged Shrieks.
"I've sent two more since Martimus. My editor is not the most patient of dwarves. If my reports aren't getting through, he'll send Wobbly."
"Wobbly?" Raleigh smiled and closed her eyes.
"You'll know him when you see him. Still, I keep hoping that you won't."
"Then it is hope in vain, and you know it," Vecina said, appearing from around the far side of the wagon. She was dressed in a light cotton wrap the color of warm gold, and had traded in her riding boots for a pair of woven grass sandals again. Her hair was pulled back and tied up off her shoulders, revealing an enticing amount of bare brown skin, much of which was covered with intricate tattoos of animals and plants in perfect harmony.
"Hope is never in vain, my dear," Raleigh said, opening her eyes and watching Vecina walk toward them. "Hope is hope. What is vain is when we do nothing to help it along."
"Then you should convince the prince to turn this regiment around now. Going to Lugoth Jor will only result in disaster."
She pointedly refused to look at Kanawha. Kanawha touched his hand to his shako.
"Get up on the wrong side of nature this morning?"
Vecina gave him a withering glance and took a few more steps toward Raleigh, showing off a significant portion of smooth thigh in the process as the cloth fluttered and settled about her body again. Kanawha found himself remembering the touch of her hands against his skin and allowed himself a small smile.
"I'm glad to see someone is enjoying our plight. Everywhere the world grows strange, and the weight of an imperial hobnailed boot does little to aid it."
He sighed and held out his hands.
"Surely you don't blame the regiment. We're on the same side, remember?"
Raleigh stood up suddenly, clapping her hands together in obvious annoyance. She set the wagon rocking as the Shrieks reacted with throaty screeches that hurt even his musket-deadened ears. Jeer growled, and his claws extended, but he slept on.
"It would be best for all concerned that the two of you hurry up and consummate this relationship of yours before someone gets hurt," Raleigh said.
There was not a hint of humor in her voice. Kanawha wasn't sure who looked more embarrassed. Just then a soldier came running toward them, shouting. Kanawha reached for the acorn against his chest and instinctively willed his senses outward. With the natural chaos of life, annoying but not threatening, was all he felt. The soldier came to a stumbling halt, his shako falling from his head and landing at Kanawa's feet. Kanawa picked it up and handed it back to the soldier, who quickly put it back on and saluted, his chest heaving as he struggled to breathe.
Major, the villagers are back. They have news from Lugath-Jor.
Show me, Kanawa said, setting off at once in the direction the soldier had come from, forcing the wounded man to trot after him. Vecina and Raleigh followed, their heads close together as they walked, whispering to each other. A minute later they came upon what could only be categorized as a land dispute in full heat.
"A right swift kick where the sun rarely graces— Oh, hello, Major,"
Yimt said, spotting Kanawa. He gave him a brisk salute, his elbow just missing the very angry face of the elf Kynan male he'd been arguing with a moment ago.
"Beautiful morning, wouldn't you say? I was just telling my new friend here, Knobnuts the Fool, was it, about the Empire, and how lucky they are we've come to this land, bringing them a healthy dollop of good old civilization."
"Nabhat,"
the elf Kynan said, stomping away from Yimt to stand in front of Kanawa. He was no taller than the dwarf, dressed in only a simple cloth around his privates. His skin was as brown as bark, and he wore his hair in a single braid down his back. A group of villagers, similarly attired, including many women and several children, stood off at a distance watching.
"My name is Nabhat, Folu of the village. You go now. Go and come back never."
It was said with fierce determination, and Kanawa admired the elf Kynan for it, surrounded as he was by a well-armed regiment of the Imperial Army.
"Folu?"
Kanawa asked, turning to Vecina. She looked as if she had just taken a drink of frog-bottom ale.
"It means head man," she said, with an edge of contempt in her voice, clear to everyone, including Nabhat,
who looked both angry and frightened of her. The women of the village suddenly began making warding signs and spitting on the ground.
"They are Majazi, a nomadic tribe of Elf-Kynan that follow the fish as they move upstream to spawn."
The Hinta elves, though not the Long Watch, hunted buffalo, deer, and tarnir in the same way, tracking them from the forest as they moved across the Great Plains. Kanawa figured he could deal with these people as well.
"Nabhat," he said, turning back to the Elf-Kynan, "we have no desire to get in the way of your hunting. Tell me what you've seen, and we will leave here in peace."
The Elf-Kynan fidgeted.
"You go now. We want no trouble. You go."
Kanawa tapped the pommel of his saber. "No one wants trouble, but it has a way of finding you all the same. What did you see?" One of the women, perhaps Nabhat's wife, began shouting at him and gesticulating wildly, pointing at the way they had just come. Nabhat shouted something back at the woman, the only effect of which was to agitate her even more.
"The sooner you tell me, the sooner we'll be on our way," Kanawa offered, keeping a wary eye on the woman, who showed no signs of quieting down.
The other women seemed emboldened by her display, and many were holding fishing spears in their hands. This could get ugly fast. Nabhat threw up his hands at the women, and, turning back to Kanawa, sighed and nodded.
"There, where Sigurds live, Lugath-Jor. Terrible things. Go now."
"What happened?"
"You go if I say."
Kanawa resisted the urge to grab the Elf-Kynan by the throat and shake him.
"Or maybe I set up a garrison here. I'm sure the ladies wouldn't mind too much," he said.
Nabhat looked startled at the suggestion.
"Terrible things. No sea, but here. And more Elf-Kynan come. Come to war against Sigurds."
He knelt in the dirt and began drawing.
"Sigurds are this many," he said,
making a dot with his finger. He then began making rows of dots in a circle around the first dot, and Kanawa's heart sank. When Nabhat finally finished, there were over 100 dots surrounding the first. The 35th foot had sent a half company to garrison the fort, approximately 50 men. Fine for showing the flag among peaceful natives, wholly inadequate for what was bearing down on them now. They wouldn't hold out for long.
"You go now."
If Nabhat was right, that meant a rebel force of at least 5,000 Elf-Kynan, not counting what the terrible things were. Kanawa waved the headman away and looked to the east. The land rose gently into a series of low, scrub-covered hills. The river wove its way through them, a thin strip of flat grassland to either side. It would offer the regiment a fairly easy time of it after the vines. It was also the quickest route, and one the enemy would be sure to watch.
"We'll have to be vigilant," Raleigh said.
She didn't have to read his thoughts. Every soldier there saw the danger. Kanawa turned.
"Do you believe him?"
"Do not trust him," Vecina interrupted. She kept casting a glance toward the women villagers, her fingers moving rapidly. "He seemed genuine enough," he said, unable to determine what was at work here. "Do you know him?" Vecina gaped and her eyes narrowed.
"Most certainly not. The Majazi are nothing like my people."
Raleigh scowled but said nothing.
"Aren't you all Elfkainen? They seem very much in tune with nature, which, as you so often remind me, is a wonderful thing," Kanawa said. "You wouldn't understand," she replied, looking with disgust as one of the village women began breastfeeding a baby in the open.
Kanawa considered Vecina's fine garment, the way she held herself, her life as the daughter of a wealthy merchant, and suddenly understood perfectly.
"Major!"
Kanawa looked past Vecina and grimaced. Lorien was coming toward him with the prince.
"Sir," Kanawa said, saluting for all present when the prince arrived.
The prince seemed caught off guard for a moment, then saluted and looked around. His jacket was undone, and his shako was perched at a precarious angle on his head, as if he had thrown it on in a hurry. And then he yawned and rubbed his eyes. The bloody fool had just woken up.
"Major, what's this I hear about finding the villagers? Fishermen, are they? I distinctly smell barajog being fried."
Kanawa gave Lorien a subtle hand signal, and the RSM had the surrounding troops bustled away in a flash, leaving only the RSM, the prince, Kanawa, Vecina, and Raleigh.
"A refined nose you have, sir," Kanawa said, opting to make this as painless as possible. "Apparently the villagers are nomadic, following the fish as they swim the rivers. This village here is their main dwelling. It was empty because they were away upstream, toward Lugath Jor. The headman tells me something has happened at Lugath Jor, though he doesn't know what, and that a rebel army is marching toward it. He estimates their numbers to be at least 5,000 troops."
"This is good news," the prince said, waking up considerably at the news. "Raleigh, you'll want to make note of this. This is clearly a pivotal moment. Everything is falling into place. We have ascertained the whereabouts of the rebels."
He smiled indulgently at the small group around him and placed his hands behind his back, rocking slightly on his heels. Lorien stared at the prince with something close to panic in his eyes. Kanawa hoped his own didn't show as he realized that the fool had no idea what to do next.
"Yes, sir, a pivotal moment. May I suggest we break camp at once and march on the garrison?"
The prince stopped rocking and nodded sagely.
"Exactly what I was going to say. Yes, we'll march at once and meet the rebels head on. When those Elfkainen see the Iron Elves, they'll run like the cowards they are. No offense, Ms. Decoy. I know a few of your race to be quite steadfast, almost Kalarian in constitution."
Anger flashed in Vecina's eyes, but she only smiled at the prince and nodded deferentially to him.
"Would have taken my head off," Kanawa thought, then focused on what the prince had said. "Of course, sir. But we might want to consider a cautious approach when we get there. We don't know the exact size of the force we're dealing with, and what, if any, additional support it might have," he said, wondering what her emissary could be up to. "And there is the matter of whether the 35th Foot still hold the garrison."
The prince's smile vanished, to be replaced by the look of one accustomed to getting his own way.
"We will find the star there, Major, and we will do whatever is necessary to procure it. I will not lead a regiment of skulking padfoots through the shadows. This is the new Iron Elves, and we will march tall and proud straight at the enemy. And it will be they who turn and run. I do hope that is perfectly clear."
"Yes, sir."
Kanawa saluted and watched the prince stride off toward his tent, no doubt to make sure his precious books were packed away properly. Raleigh and Vecina were already walking away, still whispering to each other. Lorien turned to Kanawa.
"I hate to say this, Major, but I think the prince is going to get us all killed."
Kanawa kicked a small clot of dirt with his boot, sending it rolling across the ground, shedding bits of itself until it tumbled into nothing.
"Then it's up to us to see that that doesn't happen. I can't spare you, but grab what horses you can, including Zwindera. Find troops that can stay in a saddle and send them ahead of us so we aren't surprised by anything nasty."
Lorien shook his head.
"It sounds like a wise course of action, sir, but it won't work. The horses are all but done in. Your mount looks all right, and the prince has a couple that might hold up for a bit, but this weather is taking the wind right out of them. We could still do it. I brought a few of the lads from the 14th over with me, but I spread them out through the regiment to steady the weaker elements. I don't think I want to take them out now, just when things are going to get dicey."
Kanawa considered for a moment, commandeering a few brindos or murifants, but quickly threw out that idea.
"Then they'll have to go on foot. If we get there blind, we're dead."
"A section ought to do it. They'll move a lot faster than the regiment, even on foot, especially with that Elf Kynan as a guide. If we send them out right now, we should have good warning of what's up ahead. If the 35th Foot still hold the garrison, we might be able to squeeze the rebels between them and ourselves and catch them in a crossfire when we get there."
Now Kanawa shook his head.
"Don't underestimate the Elf Kynan. For all we know, there could be 30,000 of them waiting for us, and that isn't counting the Star. Or the Shadow Monarch."
"You really think so, sir?"
Kanawa patted his jacket over his heart and looked east at the growing wall of rain clouds.
"Lorien, I'm not sure what I believe anymore. All I know for certain is we're going to need every bit of luck, skill, and chicanery we've got. So get Nabhat and get me those scouts."
Lorien saluted.
"Have no fear, Major. I know just the lads for this."
Kanawa saluted and stood there, while Lorien ran off into the bustling camp. If there was something terrible waiting for them, the soldiers Kanawa had just ordered to scout ahead weren't coming back.